and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our super special guest is Sherry Walling, a clinical psychologist, founder of Zen Founder, a podcaster, and an author. And today we're going to talk about psychological founder struggles and everything you have to go through. This episode is brought to you by userlist.io, a new tool for sending event-based email to your SaaS users. Overwhelmed with existing automation tools? Try this simple solution for converting free trials, user onboarding, and promoting specific features in your web application. To learn more, join the waiting list at userlist.io. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for having me on the podcast today.
We're absolutely thrilled to have you as a guest. How about we start with a short questionnaire and then continue with the main topic?
Great.
And question number one, as always, is what do you do for a living?
I spend my time talking with entrepreneurs and founders about the mental side of their work. So sometimes that's talking about anxiety. Sometimes it's talking about interpersonal relationships on your team. Sometimes it's talking about the stress that a business can have on your family. So I get to talk and listen to people all day and really hear about some of the struggles as well as the successes that people have in their business lives.
That's a very interesting place to be. How did you get there? That's the second question.
Well, I spent 7 years in graduate school after, you know, going to college and doing all of that stuff. So I spent a long time in training. Much of my training and background has been to work with people who have very intense jobs. So I spent many years working with people who were recently returned from combat. So people in the military, humanitarian aid workers, physicians, people who have just high stress work, but also work that they're really committed to, that they find to be really important. So my husband is a serial entrepreneur, and we've been married 17 and a half years, going on 18. And I've spent a lot of time hanging out with founders, business owners, and in the last 18 months or so, have made the transition from a traditional psychologist, meaning one, I ran a clinic and I had patients and I did psychotherapy. And now I work mostly as a psychological consultant for founders and business owners, because I've spent so much time working with people with intense jobs, and because I have a special soft spot for founders and entrepreneurs, given who I'm married to and those circles that I've spent most of my adult life running in.
Well, we are super thrilled that you made that transition to being a sort of an entrepreneur yourself, right?
Indeed. Yep.
What does your typical day look like?
I usually get up pretty early and go to work out, either yoga or high-intensity interval training. That's kind of my physical and mental health care. So I'm usually done with that by 7 a.m. And then I'm rounding up kids, waking everybody up, making breakfast, kind of with family from 7 to 9:30 or so. And then I get everybody out the door and usually make my way to my computer. I try to give myself an hour of downtime, thought time, organization time. And then I usually spend most of the rest of the day on calls, running a tribe group, which is sort of a group coaching session for founders, working individually with people, working on talks, writing. And then usually around 3 or 4, I'm shifting back to family mode and sort of beginning the evening with the kiddos.
You've been talking quite openly about big family transitions. If you'd like to speak about that here, you're welcome, or I will just link to your one of your latest episodes where you're sharing the whole story of your family.
Yeah, we've had an interesting year. This year, 2017, was just a crazy year for us for lots of reasons. But this fall in September, Rob and I welcomed two new kiddos into our family. One is my One of them is a biological relative of mine. The other one, it isn't, but they came as a set. And we decided to do this because basically it was kind of a new family or foster care for them. And it's been really, really hard. And something that has taken a lot of time and energy for both Rob and I. And something that, you know, I think we're glad we did. No, we are glad we did. One of the kids needed to go live in a different household. One of them is still with us, and we're hoping that that's permanent. But we went from two kids to four kids to three kids in the last 3 months, and that's been a wild ride, and not something I would have, you know, set out and planned for myself, but something that we are also really privileged that we have the resources and are able to create space and a home for a kiddo.
Yeah, thank you for answering this personal question. We do highly admire your, you know, courage and being able to undertake all this stress at the same time. So next question then is, what do you enjoy the most and the least about your work?
I love that I get to talk to interesting people all day.
Great.
I mean, honestly, I'm never bored. I get to have really interesting conversations, usually really important conversations that, you know, kind of help shape the directions of people's lives sometimes. So I get to do something that I feel really honored to do and I find really interesting and kind of uses my skills and values in a good way. I don't like email. I get behind on email all the time. I'm also new to running my own business. So I've been a business really formally for just about a year and a half. And so I'm new to that part of it, even though I've spent a lot of time with entrepreneurs. And I think one of the challenges that I face is that I spend time mostly with pretty successful entrepreneurs who've been at it for a while. And so my taste for how a business should function is greater than my own personally developed ability to make my own business function well. So I sort of like know what I should be doing, but I'm not quite there yet.
What exactly are you struggling with? It's not just bookkeeping, right? It's just the whole entire state of business?
Yeah, well, it's like writing, you know, emails to promote my latest group. It's just like payment. I mean, it's not one thing. It's like helping all the pieces run smoothly. And then always the challenge of how much do I hire out versus do myself. And, you know, I'm learning enough WordPress to be dangerous, but not enough to be like awesome. So all of the bumps of getting started.
Well, we're all here with you. There are so many people in this audience who are exactly in similar shoes. So your recommendations in a few minutes will be very useful. What is your next big thing? What is your next big thing? I know you have a book coming out in January, which is amazing, and it has a very interesting title.
Yes. So I have been working on this book for a year and I'm really, really excited to get it out. And so, yeah, it's going to come out in January and it's The Entrepreneur's Guide to Keeping Your Stuff Together. You can also insert a different word, which is the actual title, but for the G rating of your podcast, we'll just say stuff. How to run your business without letting your business run you. And I will say my son, who's 11, came up with the title, even with the expletive in it. So I don't know where he heard that kind of language, but that's what the book is called. We thought it was clever. And so, yeah, so that will come out in January, which we're really excited about. And then the other thing I'm working on, or the other thing that I started doing this fall, is something that I call Zen Tribe groups. But they're basically groups, small groups of about 8 entrepreneurs, lots of different kinds of businesses represented. We get together, we meet weekly for 8 weeks as sort of this mental health wellness boot camp, where we talk about how to work well, how to handle stress, how to handle anxiety. So it's a lot of the kind of bread and butter conversations that I often have one-on-one, but in a group, which has the added benefit of people getting support and ideas from other founders who have, you know, different experiences. So those are the two things that I'm working on and really excited about right now.
Well, as for the groups, tell us a bit more. How large are they? What kind of group work are we talking about?
So they're about eight, give or take, you know, one or two. And I've written kind of a curriculum, but each week has a different theme. And we usually have lots of time for discussion and check-in. So the goal of the group is to really counter the isolation that a lot of founders feel. I think when you own your business, or even if you're a solopreneur, you know, you work alone, you are the one who carries the burdens of your business, and that can be kind of lonely. So we wanted to create a space of peers where people could be together and talk through some of the challenges that they have. And because of who I am, the kinds of challenges that we generally tend to talk about are relationships, emotions, how do we take care of our individual personal well-being. So we have one of the sessions that we have in the 8 weeks is called Deep Work and Deep Play. So we talk about strategies for focusing better in work. We also talk about the importance of really letting yourself play and enjoy parts of life, and that it's both deep work and deep play are kind of the ingredients for a healthy, well entrepreneur.
That sounds like a great investment, because as a founder, I am totally on board with every single trouble that you just mentioned. So going back to the main topic of the conversation, you have a ton of experience. You've heard a bazillion of stories. What are the top problems that you see founders struggling with psychologically? And then we can address those problems one by one in today's conversation and discuss ways of dealing with them.
I think one of the top problems is the one I mentioned already. It's isolation.
Mm-hmm.
The sense in which other people don't necessarily get or aren't as invested in work life as that founder.
Why would you think is that? Because there is a community around us, and we'll have family and, you know, local community. Is that because they don't understand what exactly we're doing for life?
Well, I think, and what I know of you, Jane, is that you have done such a great job of being in communities, of going to conferences, of being out there, of running your podcast. I mean, you create community. You're part of community. And I think you and I are somewhat exceptional in that way. I think there are lots of people who are running their businesses who maybe learn their business tactics online or through, you know, books and training, and don't necessarily take the effort and the expense and the time to go and be around other founders. I do think that some of the isolation is caused by the kind of the anxiety burden that founders feel when you are the one who is making all of the decisions for your business. Some people have a co-founder or have a team, people that they work with, but aren't necessarily talking with peers very much, with other people who care about the same things that they care about. There was recently a thread on Hacker News that was a founder, you know, talking about how he's a tech founder, runs a small tech company in a pretty isolated place, and really not around anyone who has similar interests. You know, maybe he's not into hockey or football, and so would you talk to people about if they aren't entrepreneurs or interested in business? And, you know, this is harder or easier for different people, but I do think that there's a sense of loneliness and isolation that goes along with being a founder that is fairly universal.
So what would be the ways of dealing with that? You just called out going to conferences, and thank you so much for the kind words. I think visiting conferences has been huge for just not feeling alone, exactly, and making real friends. Besides that, what other ways of dealing with that can you suggest?
There certainly are communities that meet online. You know, the fact that this person posted his feelings on Hacker News, I think was important because a bunch of people responded and a bunch of people gave ideas. So being in, you know, if you can't physically get to a conference, if you don't have the funds or, you know, you don't have the time or whatever, finding sources of community, maybe they are online. That's sort of like what we are trying to do with the Zen tribes, is that you have these faces that you see regularly and you establish relationships, you establish friendships with other people that get it. There are certainly other mastermind groups that people can be part of. So I think professionally, it's really important to have a sounding board, a mastermind group, a group of people who you can talk to about things that happen in your business. Personally, it does mean leaving your house. It means volunteering. It means, you know, being part of an athletic team or a church group or something where you're connecting with your neighbors. It's the intentional decision to be around other people, even though it can sometimes feel like more gratifying and more important to like be in your basement on your computer working on your business. It's that might feel good in the short term, but it's not necessarily the best long-term decision for you as a human.
Can you introduce the concept of mastermind groups to our listeners? Because I know it's a popular term, but it's not like universally known. Talk a little bit about the format. How is it done in the best way?
Yeah, so a mastermind group is basically a small group of entrepreneurs or people who are organizing around a similar issue. So, for example, my husband Rob has been in a mastermind group for years with two other founders who have different businesses but are at a similar level as he is. And they sort of trade war stories. They talk about what's going well. They talk about what they're learning. They're talking about pain points. They trade resources. They trade ideas. I'm also part of a mastermind group that's larger. It meets monthly and it's 30 people, which is a lot of people to have in a mastermind group.
30, seriously, that's not
it's like sort of more of a class, mm-hmm. I should say. Mm-hmm. But it's a group of people who, again, are committed to supporting the well-being of each other's business. So someone says, hey, I need some writing done. Who's hired a writer, a freelance writer? You know, how much were they? Were they good? How did you coach them to write well for you? And then the group will weigh in and help answer those kinds of questions. So again, there are several different formats for masterminds, but it's finding a group of people who are committed to supporting you in your business and that you are committed to supporting them. So usually there's an assumption of confidentiality. You know, you don't share the content of the mastermind with other people. There's needs to be some regularity, whether that's weekly or biweekly or monthly. And there needs to be some kind of structure to say, we are going to divide our time equally between the three or four or five of us, or we're going to take turns being on the hot seat. But there's a way that you structure it to make sure that it's both fair and useful. It's not just a conversation about like how cute your cat is, although that's a very important conversation. It's really designed to be a focused business conversation.
Thank you for the introduction. My two cents is that what worked for me is weekly or biweekly meetings with probably three people is what I feel the ideal size is, so that everybody has enough time to share. And it has been super valuable. So everybody who doesn't have a mastermind, you should join one.
And there's my friend Ken Wallace has a great service called Mastermind Jam, which just connects mm-hmm. people. You know Ken. Yeah, it just connects people to other masterminds, or like people can sign up and he'll help pair you with someone. Another great place to get connected to a mastermind is at a conference, to basically, you know, go to the conference with the mindset of like, I want to leave with like two or three people that I've talked to enough that I know that I want to be in a mastermind with them.
Absolutely. We're going to link to in the show notes to Mastermind Jam. And since to close the topic of conferences, well, not that we can close it because it's huge. So Rob, your husband is the founder of MicroConf together with Mike Tabor. And this is a wonderful conference, which is exactly perfect for community building. Are there any others that you can recommend which have this, you know, feeling of the community as opposed to, if, you know, some enterprise teams coming together to drink and dance?
I have really liked Double Your Freelancing, Brendan Dunn's conference, but although I'm not 100% sure whether he's planning to do that again. Anyway, it was a similar conference in the sense of people's orientation toward wanting to connect and make friends, not just, you know, drink with their teammates. I have also enjoyed selectively going to WordCamps. Those are a great place for designers and coders, people who do anything with WordPress, to, you know, find some community and friendships. I attended Business of Software this year, and that's maybe for folks who have a fairly well-established business in the software space. But I found that to be a great place to make connections and friends and, you know, really benefited. Another one is Rhodium Weekend. That's a conference that I attended for the first time this year, and I really liked it. It's for people that are kind of buying and selling internet businesses, but then also thinking about how to optimize and grow those businesses. So it's kind of like not for everybody, but again, I made some great friendships at that conference. So, you know, whatever your interest is, there's probably a conference happening. And if there's not, then it's maybe a good time to consider doing an in-person meetup or starting a little baby conference yourself.
Yeah, as an example, my co-founder Benedict has already started a conference this year with Christoph Engelhardt called FemtoConf, which is definitely stems from MicroConf, and it's just so much smaller, but also as enjoyable, which is like a baby conference, as you're mentioning it, which doesn't at all lessen its importance for me, for example, because it's a great place.
Oh, and sometimes those smaller conferences are like way more bang for your buck because you can interact with everyone. So I think isn't FemtoConf, it's about 40 people. You cap it at that or
something around 30 or 40. I'm not exactly sure. But yeah. Yes, in that range, something like Bacon Biz in Europe.
That's a great number. Cause again, you're going to interact with everyone who's there.
Thank you so much for this extensive list. Another problem and a question I'd like to ask is the relationship of a founder with their significant other, be it, you know, wife, husband, boyfriend, any other combination of things. Not every partner gets what exactly we're doing and knows how to support us in our wonderful random journey. Any tips on dealing with that?
Rob and I did a podcast episode called Onboarding Your Spouse, which...
Oh, I should link that to that. That's great.
I think it is really an important question. And in a sense, your partner is your significant other is your first investor. They're your first customer. You have to sell them. And I mean that in the best sense of the word, not the sleazy sell, but like you have to really get them on board. For you to be successful, because it can be a wild ride. As you know, there's lots of ups and downs. There can be some financial ups and downs. And I think really having really candid, open conversations about what this might look like for your partnership, for your family, is really important. And I think, you know, if there's not significant buy-in from your significant other, like that's also a really important conversation. I think most partners have fears around time and money, around how much time is this business going to take and what's the financial investment. And again, those are conversations that can be had. You can come to some terms, so to speak. And I think that's fair. Like just sort of like you're setting up your business and you have some contracts in place with contractors, perhaps. So you might want to have that kind of candid conversation with your significant other, certainly at the beginning.
We have slowly drifted to another important topic, which is money, because a lot of people in our community are bootstrap founders, which means self-funded people, which means that not only they might not make any money in the nearest future, but also these startups, these products require immediate investment funded by their consulting efforts or maybe family savings or something. And of course, there's a great deal of insecurity going on there. What are the tips on dealing with that?
On dealing with the stress?
Yes. Oh, of course, not like money management tips. That would be also great. But yeah, how do you manage the stress of that? Indefinite unclarity.
Yeah, I think it's been helpful for us. And I have this conversation with people about how to really get the money question as simple as you can. Like, how much does your family need to live in a month? And if your business isn't bringing that number in, then what are you going to do to supplement or support until your business does bring that number in? So there were some months early on in our entrepreneurial journey where Rob was like selling comic books and like selling things on eBay to try to make the number, like when his business was falling short. But having like a monthly number, I think, really helps because it just sort of makes it simple. Okay, you didn't make your number this month. What are you going to do? You need to have a backup plan, especially when you're starting. I think the other number that is kind of helpful to really establish clearly and simply is what is your capital? Like, do you have $20,000 that you've saved up? I mean, that's the money you have to play with to grow this business until the business is able to be more sustaining. And that number, you know, especially in the conversation with your significant other, should be fairly well defined. So it doesn't feel like you're walking into a black hole of financial investment, but to say we have this money, it's set aside, we're going to use this, we're going to take it as far as we can. And we're not going to borrow against our house, or we're not going to go deeper in than that without another conversation or without a revised plan.
That's a great tactic indeed. So put clarity in number. Any other typical emotional, you know, conditions you see in founders when you're working with them? And especially, I don't know, are there any edge cases? Have you seen cases that kind of are on the verge of normal where being a founder is really not a good thing for a person to be at?
I have seen it, you know, I've seen it happen in a lot of ways. Like, sometimes it's great for some period in your life, and then it's not the right fit for you other times. I think what's hard about being a founder is it's such an identity, right? You sort of share a personal identity with your business. And sometimes that keeps you from being objective enough to see like, hey, I'm actually not enjoying this anymore. Or I don't like what I'm doing, or this isn't good for my family. Or I think it's really important to be flexible enough and to have as much detachment as you can to be able to continue asking yourself the question of like, am I growing? Am I satisfied? Is this the life that I want to have? And if the answer to those questions is no, then it's quite possible the business needs to go. Like, it shouldn't be something that you feel like you have to do forever just because you started it. It's okay to sell it, or it's okay to hire someone to run it for you, to be flexible and to be able to shift. So people who are miserable should not be doing it, right? I mean, whatever makes you miserable about it, the content of the business or the conflict it causes with your significant other, that's when it's not fun anymore.
There is a common saying that having a product business is like having a baby, and that there is a lot in common. But I think there is totally a lot not in common with that, because babies are something that you can't really change anything about, unlike what you said about the business. And also, children probably grow by default, while businesses do the opposite if you don't really take care of them. So I can't really say it's a good analogy.
Yeah, a research team did a study where they actually looked at functional magnetic resonance images, MRI scans of founders' brains, and looked at the parts of the brains that were active when the founders looked at images of their business versus images of their children. Mm-hmm. And they neurologically, there were some like a lot of similarities, particularly in suppression of critical assessment. Basically, we are biased about our businesses the way that we're biased about our kids. We can't see them as a separate entity. They are extensions of us. So it's hard for us to be fully objective in our ability to critically assess how they're functioning, which is another great reason why it's good to be in a mastermind, because, you know, you might be the last to know, unfortunately, despite your efforts to be objective and track those metrics.
Absolutely. Community, once again, is a great tool for building that objectivity muscle. And it takes some effort to start asking for advice, because we're all kind of insecure and afraid to, you know, make people uncomfortable, or everyone is busy. But actually, it can be super valuable to just ask for objective advice on your current situation.
Absolutely. And it's helpful. It feels good to people to give advice too, right? The times that I've asked for advice, I've felt so like, oh, I'm so sorry I'm taking your time. I'm sorry I have all these dumb questions. But when I'm in those conversations, I think they're actually, you know, they're beneficial. People enjoy being asked about their expertise. So, I mean, just as a little, you know, nugget, it's okay to ask for advice, especially if you ask well, like ask thoughtful, informed questions, not like, how should I grow my business? I mean, you know, you got to do a little more work than that. But generally, people are pretty happy to give advice.
Absolutely. You mentioned, so the important part of your Zen Tribe groups is being able to also enjoy your life, play and do other fun things at work and at home. Tell us more about that part, because that's often overlooked very much.
Yeah, it is overlooked. And there are lots of psychological benefits to play. And when I talk about play, I'm talking about doing activities that exist merely purely because they are pleasurable and fun. They're not necessarily trying to pursue an end goal like getting in shape or making more money. But play exists because it creates our, you know, it makes our lives enjoyable. And play is associated with the development of optimism, with critical problem solving, with increased social connection. There's lots of kind of supplemental benefits, even though I just said it's something that's not supposed to be accomplishing a goal. But there's lots of benefits to play. So for me, I love to play in lots of ways. I do aerial yoga, which is like yoga suspended from a silk in the sky, or, you know, a silk that's attached to a ceiling.
Scared of this thing.
So that's it's really fun for me, though. It's a great way for my brain to shut off, because I have to pay attention to what I'm doing. And if I don't pay attention to what I'm doing, I will fall on my head. So play is also a time to give your brain that problem solving prefrontal cortex, big adult brain, to give it a break, to let it reset and think about novel or different kinds of things. Painting, reading, paddleboarding, surfing, playing Legos with your kids. Those are all valuable uses of our time. The things that we love are valuable uses of our time.
Oh, at WR Freelancing Conference, I asked you a question. What if a person doesn't feel like spending, you know, valuable time on some hobbies, because just hobbies just sound, you know, weird. And you gave a great advice about hobbies not being a regular thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't have to be something you do every day necessarily. But maybe you decide you're going to go on a painting weekend where you're going to, you know, get your easels and your paints and just spend a weekend doing a deep dive. And maybe you just do that once a year or once every couple years. That's okay. That's still giving you all the benefits of play and retreat and a break without the pressure of like, how can I possibly add one more thing to my week?
That's great advice. Thank you so much. As we're wrapping up today's episode, there is a new year coming up, 2018, and if founders listening to us could give themselves, you know, 3 or 4 resolutions, how to improve their daily life with some simple practices to improve their emotional state, what would those resolutions be?
I think the simplest resolutions are to sleep well.
Oh, so cheap and simple.
So cheap and simple. Yep. Get good sleep. spend time doing things you love. Move your body. Go for a walk. And let yourself like enjoy your business. It's a privilege to be a founder. Not everybody gets to do that. Not everybody gets to design their life that way. And I think sometimes we get lost in the weight of it. And a resolution or a recommendation would be to find the fun in it, find the joy, gamify it, make it something that really delights you.
Wonderful. So I see all the recommendations boiling down to taking care of yourself as a, you know, healthy body. And taking everything else as a game, sort of, say.
Don't take yourself too seriously. Yeah.
Right. That sounds better. Thank you so much, Sherry. Where can people find your work online and yourself personally?
I am at zenfounder.com. That's where I live online. So the podcast is there. Information about tribes is there. Information about the book launch is there. So people should absolutely feel free to get in touch with me if I can be helpful. So zenfounder.com, or I'm at zenfounder on Twitter.
Wonderful. Thank you once again, and I hope your book launch goes wonderful, and I hope you help many more founders in the new year.
Thanks, Jane. It's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Have a great day.
If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please leave a review on iTunes. It will help other people discover this podcast.